Author's note. I have put off tackling this subject publicly and in depth for a long time, not wanting to believe in its veracity, nor in the reality that mankind can be this dark and evil. And as I began my research with the limited knowledge that I'd already acquired on the subject, it was intended to be a story of Zionism through the quotes of Zionists in their own words. But as the reality of history and of Zionism became horrifically apparent through painstaking research and comprehension, I decided to turn this into an essay intended as a historical swim through the darkest bowels of human history, at the risk of illogical racist labels and public gelding of my credibility in the stead of logical discussion and debate. And despite the blatant Zionist quotes which are referenced and sourced herein, I can only ask that whoever you are, no matter what color or creed or religion or race, that you can read or listen to this essay in its entirety with the foreknowledge that race, prejudice, or hatred is left at the door in regards to the writing contained within. And that the point in history, for there to still be a point in history that this can all be turned around, is approaching so quickly that it might already be too late. I apologize to anyone whose material that I may have emulated but not sourced, if that is the case. It was unintentional, and I personally thank you for your bravery in going against the most powerful evil force on this planet with the most powerful lobbies and political control in the world. I would also ask that if any of this can be disproven, please, please, please make the evidence available to me so that I can correct this essay. I'd like nothing more than to be wrong about the following information, and of all the subjects I've researched, this is the one that I've hoped against all hope is not true, because this truly is the source of evil in this world. As the author, I hold no indemnity or copyright for this writing, nor the recording attached, and would ask that you please pass this on to everyone you can, if it so moves you, keeping all sources intact and with the sole intention of the protection of all of our multifaceted histories, cultural heritages, and our beautiful spectrum of colors, and in the interests of erasing a long history of falsified and indoctrinating education in this world. Zionism 101. To see what is in front of one's nose requires a constant struggle. George Orwell, 1946. None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free. And there is nothing more frightening than active ignorance. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Recently, the news of yet another outrageous Israeli terror attack came to light. This time it was against an aid boat in international waters trying to sail to the Gaza Strip to deliver much-needed humanitarian aid, medical supplies, and some food to the Palestinians there, who are refugees in their own land and homes. Of course, if Israel is in the middle of a genocide of the Palestinians, allowing foreign aid and medical supplies into the Strip wouldn't make much sense, would it? A bit like providing an antidote to the poison for someone you want to murder. Since the significance and repetitiveness of this type of attack and the cold-blooded murder of about 9 of the 20 or so activists on board might be lost on some of you, I wanted to write this essay to open your eyes to just what the state of Israel represents, to explain the difference between the Jewish people and the Zionist movement, and to develop a comprehension on how this Zionist movement has taken over almost every aspect of American society, its media, the world banking and corporate structure, and how this small group has infiltrated our churches and our culture with the intention of subverting it, destroying our country, and stealing our wealth and virtue. Now, this may sound like a hard claim to prove, like a conspiracy theory, if you will, and I'll admit that it took a while for me to truly comprehend this conundrum, since we've been indoctrinated with Holocaust stories and movies our entire lives. But this is actually one of the easiest things I've written about. Why? Because all I have to do is use their own words. by simply quoting these Zionist harbingers of war, destruction, and death, there can be no doubt of their intentions or of their plan, their conspiracy, to dominate and control America and the world. But before we begin, I want to deeply stress the fact that Zionists do not care about the good Jewish people. They are cattle to them, just as much as the rest of the Gentiles on earth. We are the goyim. Opposing Zionism is not in any way opposing real Jews. They are not at all synonymous, though many Jews are brainwashed into the Zionist movement. Also, there are countless Jews whom are vehemently opposed to Zionism and even to the State of Israel. And there are many websites like Jews Against Zionism and Jews Against Israel to underscore this divide. So please read this essay without passing judgment on the Jewish race itself. For Americans aren't the only culture that can be stupid enough to be fooled into supporting murder and genocide. Remember that, for we are all sheep to the Rothschild-created Zionist elite. And it is important to understand that the word Jew in many of the below quotes is not referring to the Jewish race as a whole, but to the Zionist cult that has risen up and embedded themselves within the Jewish society, using the Jewish people as fodder and hiding within their culture so that they can name anyone who opposes them as an anti-Semite or anti-Jew. And so I say that this essay is as much for the good Jewish people as fellow humans of this earth as it is for all Gentiles or Goyim who may be reading or listening. It is even for the supremacist Zionists whom I hope will see the error of their ways in supporting and following this atrocity called Zionism. Please drop your preconceived notions and indoctrination and read or listen to this entire essay, for the full context of the quotes by mostly Jewish Zionists will astound you. And now, let these Zionist words be your guide. But first, let's start with a short history lesson. Question: what is the only country in the Middle East that has made actual, repeated, admitted, and well-documented terrorist attacks against America? In the 1950s, in what is now called the Lavan Affair, the Israeli government sent Jewish agents into Egypt to blow up American movie theaters, libraries, and other American targets. But when a Jewish terrorist bomb exploded prematurely, the incident led to the capture of the entire Israeli terrorist cell involved. As with all political terrorism by a government, this attack was meant to lead America into a war with the innocent nation of Egypt. However, since Israel was caught red-handed and it admitted in the Jerusalem Post to the terrorist attack against America, Egypt was saved by grace. But the Zionist Jewish-dominated media of America quickly swept this Israeli government attack against America under the carpet. If carried out in its intended clandestine fashion, America would have attacked Egypt. But no retaliatory strike was submitted against Israel, and no war ensued. Instead, America just continues year after year to send weapons, bombs, and billions of American taxpayer dollars to Israel, which wouldn't exist without United States and other countries funding it from around the world. Headline, quote, Israeli honors heroes of Lavan Affair. Article, quote, although it is still a sensitive situation, we decided to express our respect for these heroes, President Moshe Katsav said. Jewish newspaper Haaretz.com, which never made mainstream American news, Israeli President Katsav then presented three surviving members of the Lavan Affair with certificates of appreciation at a Jerusalem ceremony, June 1, 2006. Despite the fact that the President of Israel calls these terrorists heroes, not a single congressman, senator, or media outlet in America spoke negatively of Israel for praising the Israeli Zionist terrorists who committed this false flag terrorist attack against Egypt and America. Remember, the word terrorism throughout history is rooted from governments using terror to inflict political change as a pretext to war. In 1967, Israel committed another false flag terrorist attack against America when it bombed the USS Liberty. On a crystal clear day, Israel attacked a fully marked American intelligence ship, which was in international waters and flying the American flag. After close monitoring by Israeli pilots for several days, the Israeli Air Force in a surprise attack began dropping napalm onto the USS Liberty, even as the men on board helplessly waved to what they at first thought was a friendly plane in friendly fire. After burning some of the ship's men, they began using cannon and machine gun fire against the ship. After considerable damage, Israel came at the ship with torpedo boats in a failed attempt to sink the USS Liberty and ensure the deaths of all aboard. They even machine-gunned the life rafts that the crew had deployed when it looked as if the Liberty was going to sink, which is a major war crime. 34 Americans were murdered, and 173 Americans were wounded, maimed, and burned from napalm, some beyond recognition. Again, Egypt was to be officially blamed for the attack, just as it was to be for the Levant affair. Quote, Israel made a knowing and deliberate attack against the USS Liberty. We refuse to accept their explanations. I didn't believe them then, and I don't believe them to this day. The attack was outrageous. Unquote. Dean Rusk, U.S. Secretary of State. Headline, quote, Israel communications said to prove IAF knew Liberty was a U.S. ship. Article, the Israeli Air Force warplanes and Israel Navy warships that attacked the USS Liberty on June 8, 1967, at the height of the Six-Day War, were aware that the vessel was an American spy ship, according to new testimony published Thursday in the Chicago Tribune. Jewish correspondent Yoshi Melman, Haaretz.com, a Jewish newspaper. Quote, these soldiers and Marines were entitled to our best defense. We gave them no defense. Did our government put Israel's interest ahead of our own? If so, why does our government continue to subordinate American interests? The American people deserve to know the truth about this attack. It is a duty we owe not only to the brave men of the USS Liberty, but to every man and woman who is asked to wear the uniform of the United States. Thomas Moorer, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who was privy to top-secret documents pertaining to the USS Liberty. Quote, I want this damn ship sunk. President Lyndon B. Johnson, overheard by several witnesses through the radio on ships within range to assist the USS Liberty, but whom were ordered not to. Dozens of Israeli spies have been caught in the United States since the USS Liberty attack. The most famous of these was an American Zionist Jew named Jonathan Pollard. Even the Jewish descendant Caspar Weinberger stated that the Pollard spy case was the most damaging spy case in the history of America. Pollard stole top-secret information regarding American intelligence operatives and sources in Europe. Israel then sold this information and names of these operatives to the Soviets, causing the capture, torture, and killing of hundreds of U.S. operatives in Eastern Europe. Quote, no one in the history of the United States who spied came close to causing the colossal damage Pollard did to our national security. Ron Olive, Chief U.S. Investigator. Quote, American Jew arrested for spying. I did it for Israel. Jerusalem Post front page headline. The fact is, year after year, America just keeps exporting more taxpayer money to Israel and even continues to send weapons and bombs. The people of Palestine are literally being killed with these weapons paid for by all U.S. citizens. We cannot blame our government without blaming ourselves for letting this happen right under our noses. Israel is one of the only countries in the Middle East who has consistently refused to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iraq, Afghanistan, and most importantly Iran have all signed this treaty and do not have nuclear weapons. Yet these are the countries that America attacks in Israel's name. A bully always attacks the weak. Israel is also the only country in the Middle East that has a huge stockpile of nuclear weapons. Israel has over 200 nuclear warheads in its possession. Not a good thing for a supremacist terrorist state to have, if I don't say so myself. Yet the United States government and its media almost completely ignores this fact and attacks without just cause all of the Arab countries which pose absolutely no threat to Americans in any way, countries which should be our allies in commerce and peace. And America does this because it is the will of Israel. America's foreign policy is dictated by the pro-Israel Zionists who have usurped this country, its government, its wealth, its commerce structure, its media, and its people's public opinion about itself and Israel. Quote, Zionist Jews, and he himself, doesn't believe in Western morality. The only way to fight a moral war is the Jewish way. Destroy their holy sites, kill men, women, and children, and cattle. And that was said by Manus Friedman, famous Jewish rabbi. Quote, we can still remember the smell of Auschwitz and Treblinka. Next time, we will take you all with us. Israeli official, as quoted by Seymour M. Hersh's The Samson Option. Remember, next time we will take you all with us is alluding to nuclear war. On October 12, 2000, the USS Cole was attacked while harbored and refueling in the Yemeni port of Aden. 17 American sailors were killed and 39 were injured. The attack was conveniently blamed on Al-Qaeda, who claimed fairy tale-like convenient responsibility in the Zionist-controlled media as a suicide bombing. The U.S. government held the Arab nation of Sudan liable for the attack and froze the country's assets. According to former CIA intelligence officer Robert Fink, the blast appeared to be caused by explosives molded into a shaped charge against the hull of the boat. It was speculated at the time that over 1,000 pounds of explosives were used. Does this sound like a suicide attack? That's a lot of explosives. I certainly can't squat 1,000 pounds. It is important to note that FBI Special Agent John O'Neill had quit his job at the FBI after his investigation into the USS Cole attack in Yemen was obstructed and sabotaged by U.S. Ambassador to Yemen, Zionist Barbara Bodine. This is because the USS Cole was not done by Al-Qaeda. The USS Cole was hit by an Israeli cruise missile, see the source here, to sway public opinion against Arabs, Al-Qaeda, as well as to demonize the Democrats who publicly didn't take the terror threat seriously, so that their Zionist Israel-friendly puppet, George W. Bush, could be hurled into office in time for 9/11 with a rigged election. This was, of course, completely covered up. More on Agent John O'Neill below. The events of September 11, 2001 have been whitewashed by the government and the American media to reflect only Arab involvement. Of course, Israel's sworn enemy is the entirety of the Arab nations. Quote, 1 million Arabs are not worth a Jewish fingernail. Rabbi Yaakov Perin, New York Daily News, February 28, 1994, page 6. Quote, even the best of the non-Jews should all be killed. Rabbi Simon ben Yahi, Talmud, Minor Tractates, Soferim 15, Rule 10. And I apologize for any mispronunciations I make in some of these names. There is overwhelming evidence that the Mossad, the equivalent of the CIA in Israel, is the party most responsible for 9/11. From Israeli companies paying huge fines for breaking their leases to exit the World Trade Center just days before 9/11, to the many Jewish people told not to fly and to stay out of the World Trade Center buildings on that day, only five Israelis died on 9/11 and two of the five were supposedly aboard the supposedly hijacked flights. However, many good regular Jewish people did die that day. to the obvious involvement and cover-up of top Zionist and pro-Israel U.S. officials in offices of political power, to the fact that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, to the fact that Osama bin Laden, whose CIA asset name was indeed Mr. Tim Osmond, was never actually charged with any crime related to 9/11, and you can check the FBI's most wanted list for that. To the fact that Israel is steering the United States in the direction of war, undeclared war, through occupation and destruction of infrastructure and takeover and theft of resources, with innocent Arab countries, despite continuously being caught in false flag terrorist attacks, for which they blame on these Arab nations, to the reality of claims that Israeli Mossad agents are generally responsible for killing our soldiers in so-called suicide bombings and other attacks for which they portray as being perpetrated by Muslim al-Qaeda insurgents in a fake, undeclared war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Quote, "Wild card, ruthless and cunning, has capability to target U.S. forces and make it look like a Palestinian Arab attack." SAMS, or SAMS, officers about the Israeli intelligence service Mossad and reported in the Washington Post on September 10, 2001, a day before 9/11. The word Al-Qaeda has a few interpretations. Interestingly, it was the name given to a CIA computer program many years ago before the terrorist group supposedly emerged. Perhaps more interestingly, it is hilariously also used as a slang for the toilet. Yeah, if I were a terrorist group, I'd call myself the toilet, too. Imagine a Mexican gang naming themselves El Baño, or a French gang called La Bidet. Former FBI Special Agent John O'Neill, who was tasked with investigating bin Laden and had classified information, was hired as the head of security at the World Trade Center after leaving the CIA by staunch Jewish Zionist Jerome Hauer, who had advised the White House to go on the antibiotic effective against anthrax called Cipro a week prior to the actual mailings of the anthrax letter blamed on Al-Qaeda terrorists. Hauer was an expert in bioterrorism and in charge of the National Institutes of Health, NIH, response to the anthrax attacks. In a more than obvious conspiracy, John O'Neill was killed on his first day of work at the World Trade Center, which was September 11, 2001. Remember, he had classified information about the USS Cole incident. Philip Zelikow, who is a dual citizen of Israel and the United States, as were many others in the Bush cabinet, was appointed the executive director of the 9/11 Commission. In other words, a Zionist Israeli held the most powerful position on the 9/11 committee, and he was a citizen of Israel. This criminal Zionist Jew was responsible for concocting the official story of 9/11 as reported in the 9/11 Commission report. For the full Zionist 9/11 story, go here. And by all means, do the research and verify this all for yourself. 9/11 was just another false flag attack carried out by Zionist Israel, blamed on the Arab countries once again and used as a catapult to force the American people through government control into unpopular terrorist attacks on friendly Arab nations, with the people's unwittingly misguided support. But in reality, since our own government is jam-packed full of Zionist, dual Israeli citizens and traitors to our country, it was our government that let it happen, for the same reasons, to kill millions of innocent Arab men, women, and children in the name of Zionism and Israel. And America continues to fight Israel's false wars with U.S. taxpayer money. And finally, just today I found a press release from Washington that almost seemed to encourage my pursuit of this subject. Declassified files detailing an FBI investigation targeting the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, or APAC, the most powerful lobby in the United States, are now available on the Internet. AIPAC was investigated after it acquired and circulated classified government information provided in strict confidence by U.S. industry and worker groups opposed to AIPAC-sponsored economic legislation, unquote. PR Newswire, U.S. Newswire, as reported in Forbes, March 10, 2010. The full article can be seen here. The article details leaked classified information, corporate espionage, usurpation of government authority with Israeli intelligence officers undercover in AIPAC, theft of government property, interviews with Dan Halpern admitting to passing classified U.S. documents to AIPAC, as well as lists of the traitors, and more. The files are available on the Internet for the first time and should be utilized while the Internet still can be. You ever heard about the real Holocaust? From 1917 to 1945, the Bolshevik Revolution and its communist Red Army ethnically cleansed and killed at least 7 million Germans and millions more white Christians across all of Eastern Europe. They raped at least 2 million German women and millions more Eastern European women. 7 million Christians were enslaved and killed in the Ukraine Holodomor. The Red Army enslaved Eastern Europe for almost half a century. Who was the founder of the Bolshevik Red Army? None other than Leon Trotsky, real name Lev Bronstein, who is listed as, quote, one of the greatest Jewish generals in history. The Jewish Encyclopedia, 1943, volume 10, page 312. Trotsky oversaw the murder of millions of Christian Russians. In fact, 5 out of the 6 Bolshevik Red Army leaders were Jewish, including Lenin, Trotsky, Zinoviev, Kamenev, and Sverdlov. All of these men spoke Yiddish. Quote, the Bolsheviks were led by non-Russians who hated the Russian people. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Russian dissident and Nobel Peace Prize winner, from when the award was actually given for peace. Alexander Solzhenitsyn's book entitled The Gulag Archipelago, written between 1958 and 1968, was only seen distributed in Samizdat, or underground publication in the Soviet Union, until it was allowed to be published there in 1989, and is now required reading in Russian schools, as a sense of nationalism is now with the new Russia. The word archipelago, the Greek word for a cluster or chain of islands, compares the system of labor camps spread across the Soviet Union as a vast chain of islands, known only to those who were fated to visit them. The book goes against the myth that the forced labor camps in Russia were Stalin's brainchild, and shows that Lenin was the instigator of that vast system of slave labor gulag camps in the pre-Stalin era, for which Stalin revamped later on. Perhaps this is why outspoken Americans like me are so fearful of the vast prison system in America, including our World War II prison camps left over from when we imprisoned anyone of Japanese origin, and the newer Halliburton KBR no-bid contracted FEMA prison camps being built throughout the land. Old Dick Cheney is the kingpin of the private prison business. Talk about a candidate for Red Army general. The Gulag Archipelago also exposes the 6 administrators of this island chain of labor camps, the greatest killing machine in all of history, which include Aaron Soltz, Yakov Rapoport, Lazar Kogan, Matvei Berman, Gingrich Yagoda, and Naftali Frankel. None of these men were Russian in ethnicity, but were in fact Zionist Jews. Now understand that Zionism predates the 1900s. The first International Zionist Congress was held in Basel, Switzerland in 1897, and has roots way before this time. And we must remember, Zionists did not have a state of their own until they violently took over Palestine when the United Nations voted for the creation of it on May 14, 1948. It is ironic and sad that this would become the new Jewish Zionist Independence Day. I wonder what the Palestinians who lost their independence on that day must call it. Headline, Stalin's Army of Rapists, the Brutal War Crime That Russia and Germany Tried to Ignore. Article, quote, As well as the estimated 2 million rapes in Germany, there have been between 70,000 and 100,000 in Vienna, and anywhere from 50,000 to 200,000 in Hungary, as well as thousands in Romania and Bulgaria, which had been pro-Nazi, but also in Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Yugoslavia, which had not been. Mail Online, October 24, 2008, describing a new controversial movie, A Woman in Berlin. Quote, indeed, as Beaver points out, the Red Army raped Russian women who had been liberated from concentration camps, emaciated and wearing their prison uniforms. Overall, however, Russian soldiers tended to prefer plumper and better fed women, and one diarist recorded the satisfaction felt by some Berlin women that these tended to be the wives of Nazi Party functionaries. Vodka played a role, of course, but the worst of the behavior was fueled by sheer hatred and aggression, as well as a cold-hearted sense of deterrence for the future. Mail Online, October 24, 2008, Stalin's Army of Rapists. Quote, they do not speak a word of Russian, but that makes it easier. You don't have to persuade them. You just point a revolver and tell them to lie down. Then you do your stuff and go away. Russian Red Army soldier written in a letter sent to his home dated February 1945. It was unusual for Red Army soldiers to admit to rape in letters home. October 24, 2008, Stalin's Army of Rapists. Quote, in the house next to ours, Soviet troops went in and pulled the women onto the street, had their mattresses pulled out and raped the women. The men had to watch, and then the men were shot. Right at the end of the street, a woman was tied to a wagon wheel and terribly misused. Of course, you had the feeling that you wanted to stop it, but there was no possibility to do that. Women going to and from work past Red Army pickets were routinely raped. John Noble, local inhabitant of Dresden, post-war interview in 1945. Mail Online, October 24, 2008, Stalin's Army of Rapists. Quote, weeks before you entered this house, its tenants were living in constant fright and fear. By day and by night, plundering Russian soldiers went in and out, raping my sisters before their own parents and children, beating up my old parents. All furniture, wardrobes, and trunks were smashed with bayonets and rifle butts, their contents soiled and destroyed in an indescribable manner. Hans Dietrich Müller-Grote, wealthy German publisher, writing to President Truman about the place he stayed in during the Potsdam Conference of July 1945. Mail Online, October 25, 2008, Stalin's Army of Rapists. Now, I dare say that most of these acts were shamefully and successfully blamed on the German peoples as part of the Jewish Holocaust. Perhaps this is the shameful alternative hidden history that Holocaust denial stems from. Quote, women, mothers, and their children lie to the right and left along the route, and in front of each of them stands a raucous armada of men with their trousers down. The women, who were bleeding or losing consciousness, get shoved to one side, and our men shoot the ones who try to save their children. A group of grinning officers ensured that every soldier, without exception, would take part. Richard Evans, professor of modern history at Cambridge, quoting a young Russian officer recalling how his unit overtook a column of fleeing German refugees. Mail Online, October 25, 2008, Stalin's Army of Rapists. Quote, rape was often accompanied by torture and mutilation and frequently ends in the victim being shot or bludgeoned to death. The raging violence was undiscriminating. The insistence on the men watching the rapes was deliberate policy, intended to underline the humiliation. Underlying all this foul inhumanity was the way the German army and its allies had behaved during the invasion of Russia. That was clearly not the only explanation. It doesn't explain why the Red Army raped Poles, Czechs, and Yugoslavs, and even Russian women, for example. For that, one has to delve deep into the darkest recesses of the male psyche. Yet the 4 years of life and death conflict did brutalize the Soviet peasant soldier and taught him to behave like a beast against the women of his enemies once he was given the chance. The Soviet-German War lasted 1,418 days without respite, and for sheer horror there is nothing to equal it in the long and monstrous annals of human warfare. Richard Evans, professor of modern history at Cambridge, from his book, Mail Online, October 25, 2008, Stalin's Army of Rapists. Quote, "There is no need to exaggerate the part played in the creation of the Bolshevism and in the actual bringing about of the Russian Revolution by these international and, for the most part, atheistical Jews." Winston Churchill. Quote, "Lenin was a Jew by the standards of Israel's law of return. He possessed a Jewish grandparent. It would seem that not only was Lenin a Jew, but that he was a Jewish racist, although he kept his ideas on the volatile subject far in the background, probably because they were in a radical conflict with the supposed universalism of Marxism. Lenin was a Jewish racist who deliberately gave Jews, especially, the most intellectually demanding tasks. He admitted that 50% of the communist terrorist vanguard in the south and west of Russia was comprised of Jews." Researcher Wayne McGuire of Harvard University. Quote, "We are exterminating the bourgeoisie as a class." Lenin. Quote, "The interests of the revolution require the physical annihilation of the bourgeoisie class." Apfelbaum or Zinoviev. Quote, "The longer the rotten bourgeoisie society lives, the more and more barbaric will anti-Semitism become everywhere." Leon Trotsky, New York Daily Forward, a Jewish newspaper. Interview in 1937. Quote, "Without mercy, without sparing, we will kill our enemies in scores of hundreds. Let them be thousands. Let them drown themselves in their own blood. For the blood of Lenin and Yuritsky, Zinoviev and Volodarsky, let there be floods of the blood of the bourgeoisie, more blood, as much as possible." Top communist Jewish official Zinoviev, Krasnaya Gazeta, September 1, 1918. So who was this bourgeoisie class? Quote, "Bourgeoisie was a Bolshevik code word for Gentile. The first law passed after the communists seized power in Russia made anti-Semitism a crime punishable by death." Izvestia, July 27, 1918. And finally, we get to a true source of pure evil, Zionist Jew and communist leader Elia Ehrenberg. Quote, "If your part of the front is quiet and there is no fighting, then kill a German in the meantime. If you have already killed a German, then kill another one. There is nothing more amusing to us than a heap of German corpses. Kill, kill. In the German race there is nothing but evil. Not one among the living, but one among the yet unborn, but is evil. Use force and break the racial pride of these German women. Take them as your lawful booty. Kill, as you storm onward, kill, you gallant soldiers of the Red Army." Elia Ehrenberg. Quote, "Elia Ehrenberg, a true Jewish hero of the Second World War." Headline, Jewish News. Quote, "Prime Minister Israel to erect Red Army Memorial." Jerusalem Post, February 16, 2010. Headline, quote, "Prime Minister Netanyahu honoring Bolshevik Red Army under the guise of its crucial role in the victory over the Nazis." From its earliest days, Zionist Jewish international bankers supported and financed the Bolshevik Red Army. Financier capitalist Jacob Schiff, head of Goldman Sachs, personally gave $17 million to the Bolshevik cause throughout these brutal years. Now, if you get anything out of this real Holocaust section, I can only hope that it is this. Our boys in the uniform are in the same exact position now in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and soon to be Iran and Egypt as these Russian Red Army soldiers were in the first half of the last century. They are being led by a Zionist and Zionist-friendly regime that has taken over our country and our military. As history repeatedly shows, this means that otherwise good and moral virtuous men can and will be pressured and ordered into doing things that they would otherwise never do in a foreign country with no rules or fear of war crimes, since there is no war officially declared against any country by the United States. Thus, the raping, torture, and murder of millions of innocent Arab men, women, and children is happening now. Right now, under the former pro-Zionist Israel Bush and the new pro-Zionist Israel Obama regimes by our manipulated soldiers. The American and coalition forces, whether you like it or not, have become the new Red Army. The suicide rate among our soldiers alone, who cannot face the horrors of their acts against innocents, should be sufficient enough to prove this. As hard as this is to stomach, it is the truth, and Americans are now in the same position as Eastern Europe was so long ago. We can continue to let it happen and try to forget it later, though perpetual war against the unknown and indistinguishable terrorists will always be the Zionist goal, or we can come together and stop the Zionist controllers and bankers now, and possibly salvage our hope, our respect, our dignity, and our pride. And maybe we can even save our country and the principles for which it was founded from the dark annals of our history. Quote, "Nowadays, an anti-Semite is someone hated by Jews." Dr. Hazel Meyer, Holocaust survivor in the Auschwitz camp. Dr. Meyer is also ridiculously called an anti-Semite by the Zionists, despite the fact that he is a Jew and former Nazi labor camp prisoner. A short word on the history of Jewish expulsion. Just in Europe and Russia alone, the Khazarian Zionist Jews have been banished over 47 times in the last 1,000 years, not including this last century. They were driven out of Mainz in 1012, France 1182, Upper Bavaria 1276, England 1290, France 1306 and 1322, Saxony 1349, Hungary 1360, Belgium 1370, Slovakia 1380, France 1394, Austria 1420, Lyons 1420, Cologne 1424, Mainz 1438, Augsburg 1438, Upper Bavaria 1442, Netherlands 1444, Brandenburg 1446, Mainz 1462 and 1483, Warsaw 1483, Spain and Italy 1942, Lithuania 1945, Portugal 1946, Naples 1496, Nevers 1498, Nuremberg 1498, Brandenburg 1510, Prussia 1510, Genoa 1515, Naples 1533, Italy 1540, Naples 1541, Prague 1541, Genoa 1550, Bavaria 1551, Prague 1557, Papal States 1569, Hungary 1582, Hamburg 1649, Vienna 1669, Slovakia 1744, Moravia 1744, Bohemia 1744, and Moscow 1891. This is an excerpt from The Synagogue of Satan by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. This was not the end of Jewish expulsion, as we all know recent history. Quote, "It can hardly be an accident that antagonism directed against the Jews is to be found pretty much everywhere in the world where Jews and non-Jews are associated. And as the Jews are the common element of the situation, it would seem probable on the face of it that the cause will be found in them rather than in the widely varying groups which feel this antagonism." Professor Jesse H. Holmes, writing in the American Hebrew. Quote, "If this hostility, even aversion, had only been shown towards the Jews at one period and in one country, it would be easy to unravel the limited causes of this anger. But this race has been, on the contrary, an object of hatred to all the peoples among whom it has established itself. It must be, therefore, since the enemies of the Jews belong to the most diverse races, since they lived in countries very distant from each other, since they were ruled by very different laws, governed by opposite principles, since they had neither the same morals nor the same customs, since they were animated by unlike dispositions which did not permit them to judge of anything in the same way, it must be, therefore, that the general cause of anti-Semitism has always resided in Israel itself, and not in those who have fought against Israel." Bernard Lazare, noted Jewish author, from his French book, and I apologize for this, L'Antisemitisme, Histoire et ses causes, published in 1894 regarding the history of the expulsions of Jews from so many cultures. And then there was that bastard, Hitler. Quote, 40,000 roar protest here against Hitler. Front page headline, New York Daily News, with a picture of a massive anti-German protest rally held in Madison Square Garden on March 27, 1933. Quote, Judea declares war on Germany. Jews of all the world unite. Boycott of German goods. Mass demonstrations in many districts. Dramatic action. Front page headline and column headlines, London Daily Express, March 24, 1933. Quote, the whole of Israel throughout the world is uniting to declare an economic and financial war on Germany. The appearance of the swastika as the symbol of the new Germany has revived the old war symbol of Judas to new life. 14 million Jews scattered over the entire world are tied to each other as if one man, in order to declare war against the German persecutors of their fellow believers. The Jewish wholesaler will quit his house, the banker his stock exchange, the merchant his business, and the beggar his humble hut, in order to join the holy war against Hitler's people. Germany is now confronted with an international boycott of its trade, its finances, and its industry. In London, New York, Paris, and Warsaw, Jewish businessmen are united to go on an economic crusade. Worldwide preparations are being made to organize protest demonstrations and reported that the old and reunited nation of Israel gets in formation with new and modern weapons to fight out its age-old battle against its persecutors. London Daily Express, March 24, 1933. Similar rallies and protest marches were also being held in other cities during the same time frame. The intensity of the Jewish campaign against Germany was such that the Hitler government vowed that if the campaign did not stop, there would be a one-day boycott in Germany of Jewish-owned stores. Despite this, the hate campaign continued, forcing Germany to take defensive measures that created a situation wherein the Jews of Germany became increasingly marginalized. The truth about the Jewish war on Germany has been suppressed by most histories of the period. Quote, Germans, defend yourselves. Don't shop at Jewish stores. Sign held by a protester after the Zionist Jews declared a worldwide boycott on Germany. Defense and offense are two different concepts. Quote, I wish to confirm, in the most explicit manner, the declarations which I and my colleagues have made during the last month, and especially in the last week, that the Jews stand by Great Britain and will fight on the side of the democracies. Our urgent desire is to give effect to these declarations against Germany. We wish to do so in a way entirely consonant with the general scheme of British action, and therefore would place ourselves in matters big and small under the coordinating direction of His Majesty's government. The Jewish agency is ready to enter into immediate arrangements for utilizing Jewish manpower, technical ability, resources, etc. Chaim Weizmann, president of both the International Jewish Agency and of the World Zionist Organization, and later Israel's first president, written to British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain in a letter published in the London Times, September 6, 1939. As a consequence of this formal declaration of war, the German authorities thus deemed Jews to be potential enemy agents. This would be like Mexico declaring war on America today, and America's reaction would be to stop ignoring the millions of illegal aliens in its borders and to stop employing their labor and patronizing their shops. Quote, in connection with the Jewish question, I have this to say. It is a shameful spectacle to see how the whole democratic world is oozing sympathy for the poor, tormented Jewish people, but remains hard-hearted and obdurate when it comes to helping them, which is surely, in the views of its attitude, an obvious duty. The arguments that are brought up as an excuse for not helping them actually speak for us Germans and Italians. For this is what they say. 1. We, that is the democracies, are not in a position to take in the Jews. Yet in their empires there are not even 10 people to the square kilometer, while Germany, with her 135 inhabitants to the square kilometer, is supposed to have room for them? 2. They assure us we cannot take them unless Germany is prepared to allow them a certain amount of capital to bring with them as immigrants. For hundreds of years, Germany was good enough to receive these elements, although they possessed nothing except infectious political and physical diseases. What they possess today, they have by a very large extent gained at the cost of the less astute German nation by the most reprehensible manipulations. Today, we are merely paying this people what it deserves. When the German nation was, thanks to the inflation instigated and carried through by Jews, deprived of the entire savings which it had accumulated in years of honest work, when the rest of the world took away the German nation's foreign investment, when we were divested of the whole of our colonial possessions, these philanthropic considerations evidently carried little noticeable weight with democratic statesmen. Adolf Hitler, January 30th, 1939, in a speech at the Reichstag. It's funny, when you take the Zionist Hollywood persona out and add the Bolshevik history and historical Jewish expulsion and worldwide boycott of Germany years before World War II, Adolf Hitler, the real man, suddenly becomes to sound a lot like a modern American complaining about illegal immigration, now doesn't he? The following is an excerpt from the Jewish Declaration of War on Nazi Germany, the economic boycott of 1933, from the Barnes Review by M. Raphael Johnson, Ph.D. Quote, "To the Zionist leaders, Hitler's assumption of power held out the possibility of a flow of Jewish immigrants to Palestine. Previously, the majority of German Jews who identified themselves as German had little sympathy with the Zionist cause of promoting the ingathering of world Jewry to Palestine. But the Zionists saw that only the anti-Semitic Hitler was likely to push the anti-Zionist German Jews into the arms of Zionism. For all the modern-day wailing by worldwide supporters of Israel, not to mention the Israelis themselves, about the Holocaust, they neglect to mention that making the situation in Germany as uncomfortable for the Jews as possible, in coordination with German National Socialism, was part of the plan. This was the genesis of the so-called transfer agreement, the agreement between Zionist Jews and the National Socialist government to transfer German Jewry to Palestine." Now, to the readers of this article, a booklet discussing the immigration of Jews from the Third Reich of Germany and the transfer agreement that facilitated their immigration can be found here. According to Jewish historian Walter Lacour and many others, German Jews were far from convinced that immigration to Palestine was the answer. Furthermore, although the majority of German Jews refused to consider the Zionists as their potential leaders, it is clear that Hitler protected and cooperated with the Zionists for the purposes of implementing the final solution, the mass transfer of Jews to the Middle East. Edwin Black, in his massive tome, The Transfer Agent, Macmillan, 1984, stated that although most Jews did not want to flee to Palestine at all, due to the Zionist movement's influence with Nazi Germany, a Jew's best chance of getting out of Germany was by immigrating to Palestine. In other words, the transfer agreement itself mandated that Jewish capital, or money, could go only to Palestine. Thus, according to the Zionists, a Jew could leave Germany only if he went to the Levant, or Eastern Mediterranean Palestine area. It was one thing for the Zionists to subvert the anti-Nazi boycott. Zionism needed to transfer out the capital of German Jews, and merchandise was the only available medium. But soon, Zionist leaders understood that the success of the future Jewish-Palestinian economy would be inextricably bound up with the survival of the Nazi economy. So the Zionist leadership was compelled to go further. The German economy would have to be safeguarded, stabilized, and if necessary, reinforced. Hence, the Nazi Party and the Zionist organizers shared a common stake in the recovery of Germany. The result was the understanding that Zionism would have to ally itself with National Socialism so that the German government would not impede the flow of Jewish capital out of the country. It served the Zionist interests at the time that Jews be loud in their denunciations of German practices against the Jews to scare them into the Levant. But, on the other hand, LaCour states that, quote, the Zionists became motivated not to jeopardize the German economy or currency, unquote. In other words, the Zionist leadership of the Jewish diaspora was one of subterfuge and underhandedness, with only the advent of German hostility towards Jewry convincing the world's Jews that immigration was the only escape. The fact is that the ultimate establishment of the State of Israel was based on a fraud. The Zionists did not represent anything more than a small minority of German Jews in 1933. On the one hand, the Zionist fathers of Israel wanted loud denunciations of Germany's cruelties to the world's Jews, while at the same time demanding moderation so that the National Socialist government would remain stable, financially and politically. Thus, Zionism boycotted the 1933 boycott. For all intents and purposes, the National Socialist government was the best thing to happen to Zionism in its history, for it proved to many Jews that Europeans were irredeemably anti-Jewish and that Palestine was the only answer. Zionism came to represent the overwhelming majority of Jews solely by trickery and cooperation with Adolf Hitler. For the Zionists, both the denunciations of German policies towards Jews to keep Jews frightened, plus the reinvigoration of the German economy for the sake of final resettlement, was imperative for the Zionist movement. Ironically, today, the Zionist leaders of Israel complain bitterly about the horrific and inhumane regime of the National Socialists. And so the fraud continues. End excerpt. And this, if anything, shows the difference between the Jew and the Zionist. And with the disclaimer that Germany and Hitler were not innocent in any way of the atrocities of war, and that this is in no way trying to portray Hitler in a heroic or positive light, only a truthful one, the real atrocities under Zionist Jewish control in the Bolshevik Revolution and Red Army, which in reality continue today with the attempted ethnic cleansing of Palestine, Iraq, and all Arab countries, as well as a constant attack on white Europeans, far outweighs Germany's efforts. And there were not anywhere close to the 6 million Jews quoted in the ridiculous Zionist Holocaust propaganda in and around Germany, with way less than 1 million living in Germany, of which more than half were exported out to other countries and the New Israel. So, in a nutshell, with the German economy already in shambles from the First World War, the worldwide Jewish Zionist population first declared a total economic boycott on Germany in 1933 to hurt its economic stability and growth even more, and then declared an all-out war on Germany in 1939 by joining with Great Britain, all the while pumping misinformation and blatant propaganda about the country. While the Jews in Germany were German citizens who identified as being German and anti-Zionist, the Zionist agenda to start the Jewish Zionist State of Israel by taking over Palestine through United Nations decree purposefully made it so that Germany could no longer trust the Jews living in Germany, since the worldwide Jewish population were now at war with Germany in order to force Germany to export its Jews to Palestine, the new Israel. Since Jews were prominent businessmen in Germany, and the exportation of these Jewish Germans would cause even more economic monetary upheaval in Germany, not to mention the fact that they didn't want to leave, Hitler decided to not agree to the Zionist terms to force Germany to allow the Jews to leave with all of the German wealth they had acquired. Imagine if the Jewish business owners of America wanted to pick up and leave all of a sudden with all of their assets and American money. And what would happen to America's economy? To really comprehend this and its consequences, see the last section of this essay on the boycott of Zionism-owned companies. America would be in economic shambles far worse than Germany. And so, the Zionists entered into an unholy alliance, the transfer agreement mentioned above, with Hitler's National Socialist Party to allow Jews to be exported from Germany, all the while still spreading horrific propaganda about Hitler, his army, and the people of Germany. And when all was said and done, and the surrender of Germany was complete, the stories of Jewish Holocaust and extermination were forced onto the world, hiding the true history of the Zionist-led Bolshevik Red Army's horrific war crimes and labor camps from the annals of true world history. And ever since, most white European countries have been conned into paying reparations to Israel in the form of billions and billions of dollars, as well as supplying weapons, and Israel could not support itself or its ethnic cleansing efforts without these. This is the Zionist group we are dealing with today, inside of our own country, economy, and government. But what about the Nazi death camps? As far as the prison and forced labor camps that have been deemed Nazi death camps, let's have a look at the most notoriously lied about camp in Zionist Holocaust history, named Auschwitz. This is a factual list of some of the facilities available to prisoners at the alleged Nazi death camp of Auschwitz in Poland. Most of these facilities can still be seen in the camp today, including the cinema, the swimming pool, hospital, library, and post office. Camp Complaints Office, where inmates could register complaints or make suggestions. Camp Commander Hoes had a standing order that any inmate could approach him personally to register a complaint about other inmates, such as capos and even guards. Auschwitz Maternity Ward. Over 3,000 live births were registered here, with not a single infant death while Auschwitz was in operation under German rule, and it had a child care center where working mothers could leave their children. I'm sorry, but the disconnect between killing Jews and then rearing and caring for their babies and children with such finesse doesn't really make sense to me. How about you? The Camp Kitchen. One of the largest service buildings in Auschwitz, with state-of-the-art cooking facilities. There were 12 of these throughout the camp. Note that the caloric content of the diet was carefully monitored by camp and Red Cross delegates. These only deteriorated in Auschwitz and other camps towards the end of the war, when German railroads and the entire transport system collapsed under constant Allied aerial attacks. Germans kept meticulous records of everything. Here are a few websites for you to check out. The Red Cross death records at Auschwitz show prisoner deaths mostly from disease like typhoid and of old age. Saunas with small ovens and gyms, as lice carried typhus, which caused typhoid fever. Major French magazine acknowledges Auschwitz gas chamber fraud. Interview with Dr. Franciszek Piper, director of the Auschwitz State Museum. The Auschwitz State Museum has recently revised its half-century-old claim that 4 million humans were murdered in the Auschwitz camp. They now claim that maybe around 1 million were murdered. And to offer proof of this claim, the museum has nothing. Yet the museum displays disturbing piles of hair, boots, eyeglasses, and other items of clothing and personal possessions from supposedly murdered prisoners. As propaganda, these are admittingly effective tools. However, as evidence of murder, they are profoundly ridiculous.